This is VoiceAmerica.com, America's voice.
Welcome to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century with Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the host, guests, and callers. Now helping you with age management in the 21st Century, here is Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century. This is your host, Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff, Physician Director of California Longevity and Vitality Medical Institute. Today's topic is breast health, and my guest is Dr. David L. Green. We'll introduce our guest in just a moment, but first let's ask a few questions. For all the women out there, how many of you have had breast problems? How many of the women have had breast cancer? How many of the women are worried that they might get breast cancer? And how many of the women have female relatives, mothers, sisters, grandmothers, with breast cancer that might put you at an increased risk of breast cancer? And how many of the men have wives, girlfriends, mothers and sisters, aunts, who have had breast cancer or at risk for breast cancer? How many of you have heard that hormones may affect the risk of breast problems, including breast cancer, but you may want to take some of these hormones to help with your symptoms of menopause or even for contraception? We'll address these issues today as we discuss breast health. For the first-time listeners, let's just mention a brief overview of the program. This program is an informal series of discussions, questions, and answers about how to manage the aging process medically and successfully. We've chosen topics that we felt would be interesting, but that's where you, the audience, comes in. We want you to participate actively by calling in with questions, comments, or opinions to the toll-free number 1-888-335-5204. That's 1-888-335-5204 to ask a question to our guest or to myself. Remember that no question is too silly or too stupid. The only way to get an answer or to learn is to ask a question. And it's very likely that others have the same or similar question that you're thinking but might feel a little uncomfortable calling in. But that's okay. We're here to help and to provide honest answers without hype in a comfortable atmosphere. Before we jump into breast health, let's take just a minute to explain what age management medicine is. This area in medicine is all about improving health span, improving quality of life, and delaying disease. It incorporates the established practice of prevention.
Welcome to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century with Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the host, guests, and callers. Now helping you with age management in the 21st Century, here's Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century. This is your host, Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff, Physician Director of California Longevity and Vitality Medical Institute, and we are live on TalkNet Radio. Today's topic is diets from A. Atkins to S. South Beach to Z. Zone. My scheduled guests are Ms. Corrine Reinhart, Certified Clinical Nutritionist from San Diego, and Dr. Richard Fleming, cardiologist and author of Stop Inflammation Now. We'll introduce our guests in just a moment, but first, for all the listeners today, we need to ask, what symptoms or body changes are you having that could be related to your diet? And what symptoms or body changes is your spouse, partner, girlfriend, or boyfriend having that might be related to diet? And even one step further, what changes are in your blood that you don't know about that might be related to your diet? It could be related to a problem with your health. But first, for first-time listeners, a little bit about the program. This program will be an informal series of discussions, questions, and answers about how to manage the aging process medically and successfully. We've chosen topics that we felt would be interesting, but that's where you, the audience, comes in. We want you to participate actively by calling in with your questions, comments, or opinions to the toll-free number. That's 1-866-473-2176. That's 1-866-473-2176. 573-2176 to ask a question to our guests or myself. Remember that no question is too silly or too stupid. The only way to get an answer or to learn is to ask a question. And it's very likely that others have the same question that you're thinking, but might feel a little uncomfortable calling in. But that's okay. We're here to help and here to provide honest answers without hype, and also in a comfortable atmosphere. Before we jump into diets, let's just take a minute to explain what age management medicine is. This newer area of specialization in medicine is about improving health span and improving quality of life and delaying disease. It incorporates the established practice of preventive medicine along with balanced hormone replacement using only bioidentical or natural hormones. Also includes nutrition, supplements, and lifestyle changes, as well as integrative medicine. For more information, please go to my website, www.longevitymd.net. Well, let's talk about diets and obesity. We have an incredible obesity epidemic in this country, as no doubt none of you are familiar with. We now know that obesity occurs in 31% of Americans, people in the U.S., and that's defined as a body mass index greater than 30. That's just a way to incorporate height and weight into one number. So a third of people are obese, and two-thirds, 65%, are overweight, and this is dramatically up from just 10 years ago. The extreme obese now represents 5% of our population. That represents people with a body mass index greater than 40, and this is compared to only 3% about 10 years ago. We know that African Americans and Hispanics have a higher rate than Caucasians, and those ages 50 through 69 have the highest rates of being overweight. Of course, there's also an overweight epidemic in teens, with now 16% of teens in the U.S. being overweight, compared to just 10% 10 years ago. And even the World Health Organization has now declared that one in six people in the world, one in six, are overweight, perhaps even more than those who go hungry every night. And the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, has found that obesity and inactivity is the second most common cause of preventable death, right behind tobacco usage. And it's pretty close right now, and they predict in the next 10 years, obesity and inactivity will take over tobacco usage as the most common cause of preventable death. Is this surprising? Well, if we look at one can of soda that's 12 ounces and has 150 calories in it, if you drink one can of 12-ounce soda a day, that'll add up to 16 pounds in a year. Yes, 16 pounds in 1 year. And indeed, we are eating more calories compared to about 10, 15 years ago. The average woman is eating about 400 more calories, and the average man is eating about another 200 calories. Excuse me. When I say calories, I'm referring to what we call in medicine or in biology kilocalories, but I'll just say calories in general. This is not surprising given if we look at information from the USDA, the Department of Agriculture, comparing 80 years ago to today, the average American is eating five times more margarine. The average American is eating 10 times more salad and cooking oil. The average American is eating five times more carbonated soft drinks in a year, and over 35 times more corn sweeteners. Of course, we have an epidemic of inactivity. 25% of adults in the U.S. are completely sedentary, and 60% do not exercise regularly. And, of course, this happens in kids as well. We've got more TV watching, more computer watching, more Game Boy playing, and so forth. So today's topic is about diets and weight loss. First, we're going to be talking a little bit about an anti-inflammation diet that our scheduled guest has information about and has done research into. Then we're going to be talking about Atkins, pro and con, then South Beach, then Zone. And if we have time, perhaps for talking about the Ornish diet and maybe the Dr. Phil diet, but we'll also take time for questions. And we will also take time for taking questions that have come in through the internet. So let's see, do we happen to have Dr. Fleming? Are you happen to be there today?
I'm here. How are you today?
Well, we have Dr. Richard Fleming, who is with us. He's a cardiologist from Omaha, Nebraska, and he is the founder and director of the Fleming Heart and Health Institute and author of Stop Inflammation Now. Welcome, Dr. Fleming.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're pleasure to have you. We also have with us Ms. Corrine Reinhart, who is a certified clinical nutritionist from San Diego, California. She's also a sports medicine nutrition certified. Welcome, Ms. Reinhart.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, Dr. Fleming, let's start with you. Tell us how you became involved in this area of diets and health.
Well, I got involved with the American Heart Association almost 30 years ago now, and slowly but surely during that time started looking at what was causing heart disease and what we could do to actually improve upon it. And over the last 15 years became convinced that we were missing some of the points that were key, and by that I mean we were focusing so much on just cholesterol at that point in time that we were missing so many of the other factors that were causing heart disease. And slowly but surely began the process of working through what caused heart disease and how the diet influenced that, and discovered that not only does the diet produce heart disease through inflammation or swelling, but those same types of foods are what's responsible for increasing our weights and producing this obesity epidemic. So in some ways, Stop Inflammation Now maybe should have had another name where we had diet on it, because more people would be aware of the influence of food and diet and lifestyle and reducing weight and reducing heart disease. And in other regards, we wanted to so much point out that inflammation was what was the underlying cause of heart disease and Alzheimer's disease and certain types of cancers and diabetes that we focused on calling it Stop Inflammation Now.
Okay, and tell us, Dr. Fleming, why you wrote your book.
Well, we'd written a couple other books before that were moderately successful in getting some of the information out, but in working with several different diets over the years and watching this obesity epidemic get worse and worse and worse, and watching heart disease and strokes get worse and worse and worse, it was obvious that I needed to do something to try to explain in terms that people would understand what the problem was, why we were getting heavier, why we were having more heart attacks and strokes, and to try to demystify the entire issue, because the debate right now changed from one of several years ago of, wait a minute, you get overweight because you're eating too many calories, to, no, you're either eating too much fat or you're eating too much carbohydrates. And the problem with that is that it's confused everybody. And as you can see, the result is that a lot of individuals are following a variety of diets, but the issue of obesity and heart disease are continuing to increase, and at very best, they're holding steady. But the weight issue itself has gotten progressively worse, and I felt compelled to try to get something out there that people would understand and be able to look at and go, well, this makes perfect sense if you get the truthful information versus all the misconceptions that are there.
Interesting. And tell us briefly, have you had much luck in terms of your patients being able to follow the book and so forth? Has it been helpful in your practice?
Right. Actually, the book evolved out of a lot of work that we did with the patients in the practice. So we followed what worked for the patients and then put that into the book. We have several approaches. We have a phase one approach, which originally developed for people who had heart disease and had chest pain who needed to turn that around rapidly. And that became step one, which is fruits and vegetables. And then we wanted to not have people on that for life. We needed to teach them how to eat and how to have a healthy lifestyle. So then we introduced grains and cereals, complex carbohydrates in phase 1A. And then by the time we got to phase 2, what we had was a diet that was balanced in all the nutrients that people need, but is a healthy lifestyle program that allows them to not only eat and not feel deprived, but allows them to lose weight if they need to, or bring diabetes under control, or reduce their risk of other heart and blood pressure problems.
Interesting. Well, we want to hear about what the benefits are of the diet and we're going to talk about some of your research of what you found regarding Atkins patients or people on the Atkins diet and what changes they get. We'll be back with my guests about Atkins diet, South Beach, and Zone in just a minute. We're going to take a brief break for a couple minutes, and we'll be right back.
Welcome to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century with Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the host, guest, and callers. Now helping you with age management in the 21st century, here is Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff.
Are you looking for an age management program that will seek out and treat diseases and conditions early on, before they become bigger problems? Visit www.drbartnoff.com today for complete individualized programs geared towards longevity and health. With programs ranging from proper nutrition to safe and natural hormone therapy, there is sure to be a treatment that fits your needs. If you're a baby boomer or beyond and would like more information or an evaluation, visit www.drbartnoff.com today. Once again, that's www.drbartnoff.com. Visit and get on the track to a healthier and happier life with more vitality.
This is VoiceAmerica.com, America's voice.
We now return to Age Management Medicine in the 21st century. If you would like to participate in the discussion, call toll-free 1-866-473-2176. That's 1-866-473-2176. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff.
Welcome back to Age Management Medicine. Our topic today is diets A to Z, and my guests are Dr. Richard Fleming and Ms. Corrine Reinhart. And Dr. Fleming was just telling us about his anti-inflammation diet that has two phases. And the first phase, he was telling us, is a vegetarian diet. Is that correct, Doctor?
That's right. The first phase is actually a very simple approach. It takes and places people on fruits and vegetables and a multiple vitamin. And that evolved out of the concept that what really led to most of the people with heart disease was too much, either too many calories or too much saturated fat. And so we developed the simple approach of taking fruits and vegetables, which provide healthy sources of carbohydrates, some protein, and a little bit of fat, but not so much that the body has an excess and allows the body the opportunity to start drawing on all the buildup of fats within the body, including the arteries, and to pull it out. But then the recognition that, you know, this is not something you're going to live on just by itself, and you need more than just fruits and vegetables, so that the phase 1A then begins to reintroduce carbohydrates, complex carbohydrates, during a period of time where people learn to calculate the number of calories and look at serving sizes and not overeat. And then eventually phase 2 is a very balanced approach, which provides the number of calories that a person needs, which is roughly 10 calories per pound a day, and then breaks it down so that you get about 15% of those calories in protein, which gets you about 40 to 60 grams, and about 15% of the calories in fat, which gives you about 20 to 25 grams, keeping a limit on the saturated fat. And then the rest, the 70%, as carbohydrates, but we emphasize complex carbohydrates, so that this is not a diet that says, okay, gosh, let's go out there and eat all the candy bars and pop. It's complex carbohydrates that provide you that long-term energy. And if you look at most societies around the world that really don't have a weight problem, they eat a very significant amount of their calories in complex carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And that's the approach that people can live on throughout their life. It's not a diet that says, gosh, you have to eat just meat. It's not a diet that says, gosh, you can't have any meat. It says, let's be reasonable here. If you're going to have meat, you have to limit it. If you're going to have fat, you have to limit it. If you're going to have things that potentially are an issue, let's limit the amount instead of developing a scenario where people are told, no, they can't have it at all, and then all they do is they crave it. And what we're looking for and what we've been able to demonstrate is that you can slowly but surely lose the weight and keep the weight off because you're no longer on a diet. You have changed the way in which you're eating, and you're doing it for a lifetime so that people get healthier and they stay healthier and they get the weight down. And we've seen it time and again with diabetes that the need for insulin diminishes, and sometimes the medications aren't needed, and heart disease improves, and the medications for heart disease may not be required after a point in time, and blood pressure improves, and just a wide variety of improvements in health. We're really saying, well, let's stop the idea that we have to put people on medications for life. Let's see what we can do to improve their health so that maybe they won't need those medications. And it's always amazed me that we can look at cancer and somebody can survive for 5 years and we'll say, okay, well, you're cancer-free. But we'll look at heart disease and say, well, no, you've got heart disease. You must always have heart disease. Or you have diabetes. You must always have diabetes. But cancer, which will kill people much more assuredly than many of the other problems, we're willing to say at the end of 5 years, well, you don't have cancer anymore. So it's always amazed me that we can't take that other perspective with these other problems that are the direct result of much of what we eat and do.
Well, it's very impressive, the results that you've gotten based on your published clinical studies and on the patient vignettes in your book. But it seems like most of the patients, at least that you describe in the book, are pretty much with their backs up against the wall with severe heart disease, severe angina. Many of them have already had stents and angioplasties and so forth. And it seems like these are people who are, as I said, literally with their backs up against the wall. And I'll tell you, I would have trouble convincing a number of my patients to go on a strict diet like this to... it would just be very, very tough. I think it would be very difficult to get people to go on a strict vegetarian diet like this. And even the maintenance that has only, for example, 6 servings of meats per week, that where each serving is 3.5 ounces. How do you get people to go on to this diet?
Well, again, you know, phase 1 was developed for people with angina or chest pain. So these are clearly people that have learned to be motivated by having advanced enough disease that they're worried about having a stroke or a heart attack or a major health problem. The diet in and of itself is relatively balanced, and I think what we have done is we have changed our perspective so that we assume that we have to have a serving of meat, if you will, at every meal of every day. And, you know, I think that a classic example is in the size of portions that we see people eat today, too, how we've kind of changed our attitudes. You know, I remember when I was a child growing up and the treat would be going to, you know, let's say McDonald's and getting a hamburger. Well, now the size of hamburgers are 3 to 4 to 5 times that, and everything's biggie-sized, and as a result, you know, as a nation, we've somewhat become biggie-sized. I presented a talk a few weeks ago in Chicago at a press meeting for the American Dietetic Association, and I showed the map of the United States and the instance of obesity in states, and only one state had obesity of less than 15%, and that was Colorado, and everybody said, see, look at Colorado, and I said, isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. I think
because as I look at the map,
though,
I go,
they actually did cross over there now at the same level. The CDC, I think, came out with a recent update on that.
Well, the sad part, as I was pointing out to everybody, was isn't that amazing that we're willing to look at a map and say a state that has only 10 to 15% of its people with a BMI greater than 30, that's great. I said, you know, a couple decades ago that would have been unthinkable. Mm-hmm. Now we look at that and say, oh, isn't that great? Mm-hmm. Because we've compared it relative to the problems in other states, and so our perspective is I think the thing that kind of needs to be adjusted. Classic example has to do with exercise that we talk about in the book. There was a recently published study that talked about the Amish community, and these are not people that are out running track or doing hurdles or doing weightlifting or going to the gym. They're simply active all day long. all day long. And the obesity, the percentage of obesity in the Amish population that was studied was 4%, which means it's less than chance, as compared to the 30-some percent of, depending upon where you sample in the United States.
I'm sure
States,
they're not eating the same amount of...
They're actually eating just as many calories, it seemed, as everybody else. The difference was is that they were much more active.
Right.
So they were maybe eating a few less calories. The numbers, the actual numbers weren't there in the report that I saw, but it wasn't because they weren't eating food. They were simply more active throughout the day. They didn't have many of the modern conveniences, so they were active all day long. And that activity all day long resulted in those calories being used up, and subsequently they weren't obese.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, let's talk about Atkins. Atkins is a very, very popular diet. Unfortunately, it came even more popular after Dr. Atkins' diet, after he died, excuse me. He published his book, The New Diet Revolution, in the 70s. And the Atkins diet is basically very low carb with ad lib protein and fat, mostly saturated fat, although they recently revised that. The induction has less than 20 grams per day of carbohydrate, with 60% of calories from fat and 35% from protein. In the maintenance phase, you can increase the carbs up to about 90 to 100 grams a day. Some recent studies have shown that after 1 year, there was no significant difference in weight loss comparing Atkins diet to a regular American Heart Association diet, although there were decreases in triglycerides and some evidence of increase in the good cholesterol, the HDL. Of course, at 6 months, Atkins diet did much better than the AHA diet with significant weight loss. The problem is the side effects. Two-thirds report constipation, two-thirds report bad breath due to ketones, which occurs as a result of this diet, 51% report headaches. So, Ms. Reinhart, could you tell us your experience with people who are on Atkins diet?
Gosh, yeah, I see this so much. Almost everybody that comes into my office has either been on the Atkins diet or is on it presently, and you know, there's huge problems with the Atkins diet, and it's kind of disturbing to watch how the country's now just going crazy with the low carb. It's really hard to sit back and just watch it all happen when you know the truth. It's, you know, we're going to see another pendulum swing, maybe in about, I don't know how long it's going to take for all these people to get pretty sick. But what's so appealing to it is that people are dropping the weight, and they're not really caring or thinking about, you know, what's going on inside of them. They just know they're losing the weight, and they can eat all the protein and fat they want. And now with all the low-carb foods out there that support the Atkins diet, you know, it just makes people more excited to eat. Oh, now I can eat bread, but it's low-carb bread. It's just, I don't think it's a good thing, and I think people are just getting out of control with the amount of protein and fat that they're putting in their bodies. And there will be, you know, I think the longest anybody should ever be on the Atkins, and I know I don't promote it, but if you are, you know, a month is definitely long enough, usually 2 weeks. But people will, you know, if they stay on it longer than that, I think there can be some definite health problems with it.
And with that, we do need to take a quick break, but you're absolutely right. There are problems, and Dr. Fleming has done some very interesting research that it really hasn't made it to the mainstream media about problems with the Atkins diet and what changes it causes in the blood that are definitely not good. And we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about South Beach and Zone when we come back. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you looking for an age management program that will seek out and treat diseases and conditions early on before they become bigger problems? Visit www.drbartnoff.com today for complete individualized programs geared towards longevity and health. With programs ranging from proper nutrition to safe and natural hormone therapy, there is sure to be a treatment that fits your needs. If you're a baby boomer or beyond and would like more information or an evaluation, visit www.drbartnoff.com today. Once again, that's www.drbartnoff.com. Visit and get on the track to a healthier and happier life with more vitality.
www.voiceamerica.com. America's voice.
Welcome back to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century. Call in with questions and comments at 1-866-473-2176. Now let's rejoin Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff for another segment of Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century.
Welcome back to Age Management Medicine. We're talking about diets with Dr. Richard Fleming and Ms. Corrine Reinhart. Dr. Fleming, you did a very interesting research and published a study in 2002 regarding the effects of 1 year of an Atkins-type diet to the effects of your diet and comparing it to the American Heart Association diet. Could you tell us briefly what were the findings in terms of blood changes you found?
Well, we've looked at several different diets, and we've looked at low-carbohydrate diets versus low-fat diets versus moderate fat diets in an effort to try to tease out some of the information that Americans are following for different dietary regimens. And we've also tried to then change the calorie content amongst these different diets. So what we've seen is that weight, control of weight, is dependent upon how many calories you eat. The issue about heart disease and strokes tends to, and diabetes, tends to be related to other issues like the amount of saturated fat that's in the diet or excess calories that can be converted into saturated fat. And that saturated fat then is one of the players, one of the risk factors for increasing one's heart disease or blood vessel disease or diabetes. And so we've looked at that over the years. We've done several studies trying to sort it out. And I always emphasize to people that I'm much more interested in trying to just kind of follow the pieces of information that are out there, because that's how one gets to the truth, and then you just simply follow those pieces of information and apply them. And what we've seen time and time again is that if you control for calories and keep calories down to 1,500 calories per day or less, you're going to demonstrate weight loss in people regardless of the fat content that's in the diet. What we've also seen is that because of that drop in calories during the first 3 to 4 months, we'll see some improvement in some of the risk factors like cholesterol levels. But after 3 to 4 months, if the diet is then high in saturated fat, regardless of whose book you're reading or whose regimen you're on or which doctor you're following, if it's high enough in saturated fat, then those cholesterol levels will rise again. But it's important to point out here that, you know, we have so many papers that are trying to emphasize, there's 3 or 4 out there that are trying to emphasize that, gosh, you can go on a different diet, that low-carb diets, for example, can cause you to lose weight. Will they? Well, yes, they will. You'll lose weight on them. There's no doubt about it while you're on them. And that's assuming, you know, that you don't fall into the 40 or 50% of the people that drop out of the studies when they start the studies because for one reason or another they choose not to continue. But I think it's really important to point out here that cholesterol is normal in half the people who have heart attacks. Mm-hmm. And so from my perspective, when cholesterol is only one component and it's normal and half the people have a heart attack, that you cannot use cholesterol and say, okay, on this diet your cholesterol goes down, therefore your heart disease gets better. Because that's just wrong. If half the people have a heart attack have normal cholesterol levels, you can't look at people who have a cholesterol level in the 190s, which is high, and say that because it dropped from 210 to 190, that the risk of heart disease is less. Because half the people are going to have normal cholesterol levels when they have their heart attack. What we really need and what we've tried to do is look at the studies and say, wait a minute. We're not only interested in whether you lose weight on these diets, we want to know whether there's evidence of this inflammation going on in the arteries. We want to know what's going on, not just with cholesterol, but we want to know what's going on with homocysteine. We want to know what's going on with clotting factors. We want to know what's going on with the inflammatory factors like CRP and interleukin-6 that tell us that there's inflammation going on. And more specifically,
what happened in the patients who are on the Atkins-type diet compared to your diet on those markers after a year?
Well, what we see in people that are on low-carbohydrate diets or on high-fat diets is that even if the calorie count is controlled, they will show an increase in these inflammatory markers over the course of the year. And then when you look at blood flow to the heart, you can see some worsening of the blood flow. And we've looked at it in people early enough that they're not the types of people that are expecting to have a heart attack right away, but we can see a progression or a worsening of heart blood flow to the arteries of the heart. And that tells me that if one were to carry it out long enough, there would be more and more disease that gets worse and worse and worse. So, you know, this issue that losing weight suddenly makes everything healthy is a misconception. And I think your viewers will understand if I go ahead and explain the following issue. A lot of people are calling obesity a disease, and I disagree with that. Obesity is not a disease. If you have a disease and you treat it, then everything related to the disease gets better. For example, if you have diabetes and you control the blood sugar and you therefore improve the diabetes, the effect of the diabetes is lessened. If you have high blood pressure and you bring down the blood pressure by whatever mechanism, your risk of having a stroke or a heart attack is lessened. But you can lose weight, so you can subsequently treat the obesity and still have problems with inflammation. So obesity is not a disease, and it's not the result of some genetic shift in the United States. You know, we haven't changed the genetics of the American population in the last 50, 60 years. This is the result of poor dietary and lifestyle habits. It is the result of people missing the point that weight is a calorie issue. It's not an issue of fat or carbohydrates. It's an issue of calories. And that if you control the calories, you lose weight. But then you have to turn around and you have to be completely honest with yourself, and doctors need to be completely honest with the patients and say, you may have lost weight, but if you have too much fat or you have too much refined processed foods rather that add calories that subsequently become fat, you're going to have problems.
Right.
So in
the Atkins type diet, you did find that the inflammation markers, the CRP, homocysteine, fibrinogen, all of those things increased in spite of some weight loss, whereas the inflammation markers on, for example, your diet decreased. Is that right?
On lower carbohydrate diets, the inflammatory markers go up. That's right. And then on lower fat diets, the markers go down. But remember again that on both of those situations, we controlled for calories. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that typically is not done. You know, when we went towards a low-fat dietary approach in this country, people forgot that you could make it low fat, but you could still overeat calories, and that's what we saw happen, and that's why people became disenchanted with the entire process because everybody forgot to count calories, mm-hmm. And we're seeing the same thing with low carbohydrate diets now. We're actually at this American Dietetic Conference presented a couple weeks ago. The data was being discussed that, you know, not only were low-carbohydrate diets, had they peaked, but many people who said that they were on low-carbohydrate diets really weren't on low-carbohydrate diets. And the concern is that now with all the low-carb foods, what will happen is people will now have choices for food to eat again. And what will happen is they will overeat the number of calories, and we will see an increased weight problem in these individuals. And I think it's interesting that the number one beverage that has increased in sales as the consequence of low carbohydrate diets is beer. There's very few carbohydrates in beer. Most of the calories come from alcohol. Mm-hmm. So what we've seen is an increased consumption of alcohol as a result of a low carb dietary promotion. And I just think that's fascinating. And by the way, the potato was not the number one thing that's been cut down as a result of low-carb diet. So this phenomenon is very, very interesting to watch.
Very interesting. Well, it's time for another break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about South Beach and hopefully get a chance to talk about Zone. We're on Age Management Medicine talking about diets. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are Are you looking for an age management program that will seek out and treat diseases and conditions early on before they become bigger problems? Visit www.drbartnoff.com today for complete individualized programs geared towards longevity and health. With programs ranging from proper nutrition to safe and natural hormone therapy, there is sure to be a treatment that fits your needs. If you're a baby boomer or beyond and would like more information or an evaluation, visit www.drbartnoff.com today. Once again, that's www.drbartnoff.com. Visit and get on the track to a healthier and happier life with more vitality.
This is VoiceAmerica.com, America's voice.
We now return to Age Management Medicine in the 21st century. If you would like to participate in the discussion, call toll-free 1-866-473-2176. That's 1-866-473-2176. Now back to the show. Here's Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff.
Welcome back. We're talking about diets with Dr. Fleming and with Ms. Reinhart. We're now going to talk about South Beach diets, written by Dr. Arthur Agatston, cardiologist from South Beach in Miami, Florida. And he talks about good carbs and good fats, and that with weight loss, you'll change your blood chemistry for a better heart and blood vessel status. There's no measuring of foods and no calorie counting in South Beach diet. Phase one is 2 weeks, where there are three meals a day plus two snacks. And protein is pretty much ad lib, although it tends to be lean protein. Carbohydrates would be pretty much vegetables and salads without any other carbs. And fat is limited in terms of portion control by a certain number of nuts or pistachios, along with water, multivitamin, exercise, and so forth. And phase two, you get to add some more carbohydrates. Phase three, you get to add even more. So, Ms. Reinhart, what are you finding in your practice about South Beach diet? Effective, not? How are patients doing with it?
I don't really have too much experience because most people don't stay on it. A lot of people have tried it, bought the book, but it's involved in a lot of cooking and shopping, and people just find it's a hard diet to follow. I think it's more reasonable kind of a diet than the Atkins. However, people have said they've lost weight, but whether they really are on South Beach, I'm not sure. And my comments are, people just don't stay on it. I think it's going to be another one of those diets that I think there's groups out there, there's support groups. My experience personally, though, is I just, I like the fact that it's at least healthy fat and they're focusing on some caloric intake of fat and, getting people into a bit healthier food again, which is encouraging to me, not just processed food.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and let's get into the zone, written by Dr. Barry Sears, who talks about using a balanced protein, fat, and limited carbohydrate to decrease insulin and decrease ketones from eating too much protein. He also believes in three meals a day plus two snacks, moderate exercise, and he uses these food blocks in terms of determining how much protein, carbs, and fat should be in each. And I found, at least with patients, a little tricky to get the blocks to match up in terms of the amount of grams for each one. He, of course, does believe in adding soy. He's written a book called The Soy Zone and later added another book called Omega Zone using fish oil. So, Ms. Reinhart, what are you finding in terms of your clients finding benefit with the zone diet?
Well, of course, Dr. Bartnoff, that one of the doctors I work with strictly uses zone in his clinic, and we have lots of experience with the zone diet. And the first comment I have when it first came out was I wasn't impressed with the fact that Dr. Sears wasn't focusing on some of the healthier foods within the categories of protein, carb, and fat. So again, that was my job at the clinic, is just making sure the food was balanced and the healthy fats. Dr. Sears has created a good fish oil, in my opinion, pretty pure, one of the purest out there as far as I've found anyway in my practice. And I like the philosophy of the balance of foods, and I think a lot of people find it pretty common sense nutrition. The controversy with soy is out there. So again, there's, you know, so many question marks and controversial, you know, whether people should take soy, shouldn't take soy. Does it affect the thyroid? All those questions are there. But, you know, again, I think Dr. Sears has done a lot of good research, and I like his approach to balance in someone's diet. But again, it's not, you know, not everybody feels that great on Zone. I think there are people that need maybe more carbohydrate, maybe more protein. It just depends on, you know, I work with the approach of tweaking plans for each person that I work with.
Mm-hmm. I think his information about and a lot of the data out there about fish oil is pretty impressive also. There are other products out there, though, I think that do a little bit of a better job in terms of decreasing the rancidity of the oil, which I think could be a problem in some of the products. Some of the fish oil products are made in an anaerobic condition, meaning no oxygen, and so you don't get the same oxidation, and then the fish oils are much fresher. But nonetheless, fish oil, as we know, has been shown to be helpful in a number of cardiac conditions, brain conditions, depression, so forth, and a lot of inflammatory conditions, including arthritis and others. Well, I did want to take just a minute to talk about a topic that I thought would be interesting, and this is one called Successful Dieters. There's 3,000 people who enrolled in what's called National Weight Control Registry. Excuse me. And these are individuals who've lost greater than 30 pounds in 1 year, and the average loss has been 66 pounds. So these people were pretty overweight, and obviously many were obese. And the average weight maintenance was they maintained their weight for over 5 years, and so this study was looking at what were the factors associated with these people who were able to maintain their weight off. The average age was 45 years. 80% were women, 97% were Caucasian. About half, or just under half, were overweight as children, and just under half had one parent who was overweight. And some of the characteristics were very interesting. These people, on the average, did 1 hour of moderate exercise every day. This is of 3,000 people, by the way, in this study. Only 9% reported no physical activity. In terms of diets, fat made up about 24% of the calories, and carbs were pretty high at 56%, but tended to be complex carbs, as we've talked about, and protein was moderate at about 19%. They did count calories or fat grams for the most part, and the average number of meals or snacks per day was 5. The average number of times that they ate out at a fast food restaurant was less than one time a week, and 44% weighed themselves every day, and a third weighed themselves weekly. Do you have any experience with this, Ms. Reinhart?
Well, a lot of it, you know, does make sense to me, because I think if you look at the success of, you know, how people keep their weight off and why they keep their weight off, it does fall into those categories that you mentioned. You know, I think Dr. Fleming mentioned a good point, too, is the biggest thing that I see is people, you know, diet is a huge, huge piece of the puzzle, but I think one of the biggest things that is so absent in our society is movement. And people just don't move anymore. So the caloric intake needs to be so much less than it used to be, just because there's so many people that are sedentary. But, you know, I like those statistics, and I think it does make sense to me. And if I did some research on all the clients I've seen and the successful ones, it would fall into those categories. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that eating out is so prominent for most people now. I think the ones that eat out once a week are so few and far between.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, our time is almost up. We're just going to summarize a few things here. Obesity is an epidemic in this country and around the world, and we've talked a little bit how inflammation is bad. Blood markers will show up on blood tests that are associated with bad health outcomes in terms of your heart and stroke and cancer and so forth. And weight maintenance is associated with many beneficial outcomes and decrease in disease. Weight loss basically amounts to calorie balancing, so that what you're using is going to be related to what you're taking in. If you take in less than what you use, of course you will lose weight, and that relates to diet. The average diet, we didn't mention this, but the average diet has been shown to lead to an 8% weight loss over 3 to 12 months. Exercise is very important, but always get a clearance from your MD first. Be as fit as possible at your current weight. Lifestyle, we've alluded to, is very important, particularly in terms of stress management. Vitamins, minerals, and supplements may be appropriate, including fish oil. We know that it is important to get an MD or physician recommendation before you embark upon a diet or exercise plan, because sometimes medical problems can be causing a weight change, including thyroid or other gland problems, and there can be associated illnesses regarding blood pressure, diabetes, metabolic syndrome. And as we know, a lot of times dieting or being overweight is associated with psychological problems, including depression and eating disorders. So therefore, it's a good idea always to check with your doctor first. We've talked about how a low-carbohydrate diet with Atkins, even though it does lead to weight loss in 6 months, after 12 months, there's no significant difference. And as Dr. Fleming has talked about, it does lead to bad changes in the blood, elevated homocysteine, C-reactive protein, and other markers of inflammation, which unfortunately increase the risk of heart disease and stroke and cancer. For those with moderate or severe heart disease, beneficial diets can include the anti-inflammation diet of Dr. Fleming's, or we didn't get a chance to talk about the Ornish diet, which has many similarities. Aspects of South Beach and Zone are useful as part of weight loss and weight maintenance, but for those few who could try and maintain an increase in their complex carbohydrate in their diet, there are certainly benefits to that. Please join us next week, June 1st at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be talking about vitamins, minerals, and supplements. My guest will be Dr. Sheldon Hendler, clinical professor of medicine at UC San Diego School of Medicine and author of The Physician's Desk Reference for Nutritional Supplements. June 8th will be osteoporosis. To see a future list of topics, go to www.longevitymd.net and link onto Internet Radio Program. Archives of this and previous programs are available at the same website. I would like to say thank you to our guests, Ms. Corrine Reinhart, Certified Clinical Nutritionist. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And if those of you who want to reach Ms. Reinhart, her number in San Diego is 858-485-9850. That's 858-485-9850. Dr. Richard Fleming, thank you for participating.
Pleasure to be here.
Those of you who are interested in purchasing his book, Stop Inflammation Now, a link is available on my website that will take you directly to Amazon.com. Thank you to the producers, engineers, and support staff at SurfNet Media, and thank you to all the listeners for your participating. This is your host, Dr. Harvey S. Bartnoff, wishing all of you longevity and vitality. Till next week, bye for now.
You've been listening to Age Management Medicine in the 21st Century.